Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, June the 13th. We're doing a special show tonight with our good friend Bruce. We'll be connecting with him in just a minute. But tonight we're going to look back. We're going to look back at our musical history. The two of us are going to look back at our musical history, and we're going to talk about the Beatles. We're going to talk about our favorite Beatles songs and some of their good LPs that were released over the years. I mean, it's kind of hard to believe that it's been that long and we're still talking about the Beatles, but I guess that's a credit to their unbelievable sound and their unbelievable legacy that generations continue to talk about them. After all, they have not released a new song in 50 years or 51 years now, and yet we're still talking about them. So let me say hello to my friend Bruce. How are you, Bruce?
Good, Silvio. Am I coming through okay?
You're coming through great. And, we're just hoping that these technical problems do not reemerge. But, even in today's sophisticated world of the Internet, you can still have, technical problems. But I think we should be okay. Just out of curiosity, are you hearing me okay?
Yes, coming across loud and clear.
Good. All right. Great. So we should be ready to go. In the event that we get disconnected, I'll call you back. But let's hope that does not happen. Well, let's get that out of the way. All of the administrative stuff. Bruce, you're a great friend of our show. You and I have become great friends on social media. But I want people to know there's a lot about you, of course. So bring us up to date on your work, what you've been working on. I know you've been working on some books as well as some plays and all of that. So just kind of give us an update of what you're up to these days, Bruce.
At present, I'm working on a script from a book. The book is called The Haunted Flutes by Ethel Halsted. Been out quite a while, and a production company wants it broken into 3 screenplays, and they'll try to sell it to a provider on the internet or on cable. And so I'm working on that, and I have to sit down with the author, still alive. She's like 85, 86, a very inspired senior. I mean, she's a go-getter. And
wow.
Create more content, either another character or more content, because the book by itself isn't big enough for 3 episodes.
Right.
And now, mark people and all that stuff. So,
right. What is the challenge? I've always been fascinated by this because we always hear, like we're watching a movie, like right now, one of the channels here locally has been showing that movie that Gregory Peck made many years ago called Moby Dick. Obviously, that was based on the book, Moby Dick. But there is a great challenge in taking a book and turning it into a movie script because you obviously cannot do the entire, you can't do all 300 pages or whatever it is of Moby Dick. So it's a real challenge, I think, taking the original book and turning it into a movie script or a play script, whatever it may be. So that must be for you quite a challenge. I mean, I've never done it myself, but I can really see where it could be really interesting, Bruce.
I was taught, and I think all good writers know this too, to show and not tell. And the problem with many books, particularly this one I'm working on, it's very dialogue heavy, and the characters in the book tell the reader what's going on. My job is to turn that into show and not tell. Show in the writing, in the action, what's going on between the protagonist and the antagonist. You know, is there going to be the bell curve, or are we just going to flatline it straight through? And, you know, the protagonist has his moments, and he has his fall, and then he returns, and he eventually prevails. But to get three episodes out of that, maybe 45-minute episodes out of that, I've got to go back and sit down with the author and say, let's put our heads together. This is what I suggest. And we'll see what that, because you know this week I've been moving, and it's been a challenge to be moving in 104-degree heat, but I've been getting it done. Been doing.
Right. Interesting. Well, I think it's fascinating. It is really, I think, one of the most difficult things to do is to turn a book, whatever the size of the book, into a script for a movie. It has to be quite a challenge. Well, let's talk about the Beatles. And let me just begin with a curious question. When I'll answer the question second, but you answer it first, please. When did you become acquainted with the Beatles? Like, what was your first Beatles moment that you can remember? Did I lose Bruce? Okay, I think we're going to have him back on here for a second. Okay, Bruce, I think I lost you, but did you hear my question about when was the first time you heard the Beatles?
On Jack Parr at night in 1963. And it was one of those like little interest things, you know, here's a group from England where the fans throw jelly beans at them. And it was the Beatles. And I always remember that. You know who Jack Parr was, don't you?
Well, he had a night show, right?
Yeah, he did the Jack Parr show, and then Johnny Carson took over. It was the Johnny Carson show, then it became the Tonight Show.
Right. And so this was in 1963, did you say 1963?
Yes.
So actually, this is before they were famous in the United States.
Yes.
Wow, that's interesting. Because in 1963, they tried very hard to push their 45s or their songs here. You know, Please Please Me and She Loves You were huge number one hits. In England, they were both, you know, number one, million sellers in England, you know, at 1963, selling a million copies in England. I mean, it's always been tough, but in England, you know, that was an amazing achievement. And they didn't do anything in the United States. They kept sending the records over here, and they didn't click. In fact, there's a funny scene one time where at the American Bandstand, you know, where they would rate the record. One time they had a Beatles record that they were rating, and it got nowhere. This is in 63. All right. So you learned about him in the Jack Parr show. Well, I learned about him in 1964. We came to the United States, and we actually left Cuba in July of 64, and we had to go. We had to travel through Jamaica, and ended up in Miami. This whole thing took about 3 months. And anyway, while I was in Jamaica, we were staying at this house. It was like a guest, you know, those old, like in the old days where families would rent out a room. And that's kind of like, you know, our whole family lived in this little room when we were in Jamaica. So waiting to come to the United States. So when we were there, my father couldn't work. So we were literally being supported by my two uncles in the United States who would send us some cash and all of that. But anyway, while I was there, getting back to the Beatles, there was a young man in the house. He must have been about 18 or 19. And he was playing this 45 called I Want to Hold Your Hand. And I had never heard it before. My brother had never heard it before. And I remember it in my mind. I remember the 45 cover of I Want to Hold Your Hand on Capitol Records. I remember that. So then when we finally made it to the United States in September, the family that we knew, another family that we knew, they had some kids our age, and they were playing the album Meet the Beatles. So that's kind of how I got acquainted with the Beatles. I mean, about 9 months after everybody else did, because we didn't hear the Beatles in Cuba. I mean, that was just totally out of the question. But I liked them right away, and I liked their music right away. I thought it was pretty nice. I also have to admit that in that first wave of British music, I also loved the Dave Clark Five a great deal too. They were my other favorite band, but we'll do a show about them sometime. So you met them in the Jark Parr show, and I met them through some friends. That's interesting, Bruce.
The Dave Clark Five was the first rock concert I went to.
Wow.
And I believe it was December 64. It was around Christmas, or maybe January 65. Ticket was $3.50.
I know. How time changes. Well, anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about our favorite Beatles LPs tonight, and I want to begin by setting the table. A lot of the listeners may know this, a lot may not, but I didn't learn about this until much later. But the Beatles would release different albums in the United States than in the UK, and it had a lot to do with the record company. In the United States, they were distributed by Capitol Records. I don't remember who did it in the UK. So they would release different albums. And up to Sgt. Pepper's, every one of their albums was different. For example, in the United States, you had Meet the Beatles, the Beatles' second album, The Hard Day's Night, Something New. Then I think it went up to Beatles 65, Beatles 6, the movie Help, Rubber Soul, Yesterday and Today, and Revolver. Those albums, the American versions, were different. At times, even had different titles. The album had different title. So in the United States, I mean, in the UK, it was Please Please Me with the Beatles, Beatles for Sale, Hard Day's Night, and so on. So they had different titles. And tonight, we're going to remember the ones in the U.S. because those are the ones that I grew up listening to, I assume. That's the case with you, Bruce.
Yes. It would be Meet the Beatles, and then the Beatles' second album, which was a very successful album in Europe. You know, it was a little, they thought it was a little bit freer as far as, it almost sounded like they could do any of that stuff live. Roll Over Beethoven, their version of Roll Over Beethoven.
Right.
But Chuck Berry got the royalties, but he didn't like the fact that people thought the Beatles did the song, but he did.
Right. Well, I think the other song, the other song from the early Beatles, the early Beatles playlist, the other song that became very identified with the Beatles was Twist and Shout. But a lot of people don't realize that was not their original song. Somebody else did that song that was very popular. It was a black group that did it, and I can't think of the name of the group right now. But they had that song was a huge hit, and then the Beatles picked it up after that, and they made it into a huge hit, although I don't think Twist and Shout was ever actually released as a single in the United States or in England. I think it was just an album cut. And it was very popular in the concerts, I think. That's what it was, Bruce.
Twist and Shout. I'm trying to think who the guy was that did that. You're right. It was a rhythm blues cover that they did. And it was reissued in the 70s as an album, I believe, called Twist and Shout. But not as a single.
Well, you know, a lot of their early songs were R&B covers. Like, for example, Baby, It's You. Baby, It's You. Also, that's right. And also, let's see, Baby, It's You, Mr. Postman, you're right. Several other Twist and Shout, of course. Anna, they had a song called Anna that was very popular. Misery, or not Misery, but Chains. Chains. My Baby Had Left Me in Chains. That one was also
yes.
done by a girl group, actually, a black girl group out of Detroit, who had that particular song. So it was just one of those things where, you know, the Beatles did not have enough of their own material, really, for their first few albums, like Roll Over Beethoven, like you were saying. You Really Got a Hold of Me, who was a Smokey Robinson song, and Money was another Smokey Robinson song, I believe. So they had to put a lot of those, you know, cover versions in some of their early albums until they were able to do a whole album by themselves. So how would, like, looking back at it now, we'll talk about our favorite LPs in a second, but looking back at it now, what are your memories of Meet the Beatles, the album? Because I love the album. What about you?
Well, first of all, my sister bought it and brought it into the house. And any album that she bought, she wrote Diane on the cover. It was her album. I don't know why, but she did, you know. And my impression was, and this is the American release of Meet the Beatles, there were some songs on there that were more unrestrained. Not I'm not going to say wild, but they rocked. Like, I saw her standing there. Don't Bother Me by George Harrison. He wrote that.
Yes, that's a good song.
And then they did some mellow stuff that I guess showcased their musicianship. Tell There Was You. That, you know, that's
right.
A little song, yeah. But, you know, they had I Want to Be Your Man, you know, and Ringo
yes.
sang on that. And what they were doing, they were getting their legs under them that they could actually rock. You know, and for the time in 1964, that was...
Well, let's see. Did I lose Joe? Did I lose Bruce again? I think I may have, so we'll have to wait for him to go back in a minute. I tell you what, I'm going to take a little break. I was planning to take a break anyway. So we're going to take a little break, and we'll wait for Bruce to check in with us. We're talking about the Beatles tonight with our good friend Bruce. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Tonight we're talking with my good friend Bruce Woodle. He is an author, as many of you know. He's been on our show many, many, many times. And tonight, though, we're changing a little bit. We're talking about the Beatles and some of our memories of early Beatles albums. And we were just talking about Meet the Beatles. Of course, Meet the Beatles was the first American album released by Capitol Records. And some of the songs that appeared on Meet the Beatles came from the second British LP called With the Beatles. Even the album cover is even similar to Meet the Beatles. But it's a different tone. I mean, if you look at the colors, it's a slightly different tone than With the Beatles and Meet the Beatles. The guys are standing, the four Beatles are basically they're standing for, I mean, if you look at the photo, it's the same photo, but the photo on With the Beatles and the photo with Meet the Beatles is just just the color of it is just slightly different. So you can tell the difference when you look at it, but anyway, a lot of us grew up with Meet the Beatles, but Meet the Beatles was a great album. It was their first American album, and it included a song that I loved over the years, called Not a Second Time. And that was a John Lennon vocal. And that was an absolutely great song. that it was John Lennon, I guess, doing the solo on that one, the solo vocal. And then, of course, it also had included the song, I think we got Bruce back. I'm sorry, I think tonight we're just going to have to do our best with the technical issues with the phones, but we'll make it. We'll make it. We got plenty of time, so we'll make it. While you were gone, I was talking about Meet the Beatles, that it was their first American album, and the album cover of Meet the Beatles is similar to the British version, which is with the Beatles, but it's just a slightly different tone in the color of the album cover. But I mentioned, just as you were coming back in, that there's two songs on Meet the Beatles that I love. Not a Second Time, which was a John Lennon vocal, and then, of course, This Boy, which is a great song that was on that album, too. And This Boy was actually the B-side of I Want to Hold Your Hand in England, whereas in the U.S., the B-side was I Saw Her Standing There. So just a little bit of trivia there. But so did you like the – you were talking about Meet the Beatles, and you were talking about I Want to Be Your Man. And is there anything, any other memory that you have of that album, Bruce?
Just listening to it over and over. I can listen to it today, and the lyrics yes. are going through my head as the song is being sung. I listened to the Beatles albums over and over as a kid.
Yeah. That album in particular was a real favorite, and that's an album. I remember having that album in high fidelity, then buying the stereo copy later, and actually getting it on cassette as well. I mean, that was one album that many of us grew up listening to. But did you like that song, Not a Second Time? Because I thought that was a great song.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
The way it fades out, na-na-na-na-na, you know?
Yeah, and that was great.
That was kind of revolutionary for these guitar bands because they wanted a contrite ending to a song, you know? And George Harrison can certainly do that. He had the chops for it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, Harrison was a pretty accomplished guitar player. He wasn't a garage band guitar player. He was very precise, and he hit on all cylinders, kind of like Keith Richards. People say, well, I don't understand why people say these are great guitars, because their ability to carry that song in that time frame, in that genre. And it's
right.
got other kids, other guitar players.
I think we lost Bruce again, so we're gonna talk a little bit about we'll get him back in a second. There's unfortunately a problem with our phone lines today, and we keep losing Bruce, so I'm gonna have him try it again, try calling us back again. But the problem with those early albums, not the problem, but I think the challenge for George Martin, the producer, is that they had to release a lot of albums because there was such a demand for their music, and they, you know, especially that first year, 1964. I mean, they released in 1964 in the United States. They released Meet the Beatles, the Beatles' second album, A Hard Day's Night, Something New. And then at the very end of the year, almost into 1965, but it was actually released at the end of 64, and they released an album here in the United States called Beatles 65. So there was a tremendous demand for their music, and all of this was a tremendous challenge on George Martin, their producer, to take their songs and put them on a recordable fashion so that they could be recorded and released as an album. I mean, when you look back at it now, I think we've got our friend Bruce back. Bruce, while you were away, I was saying that the challenge in that first year, 1964, is that the Beatles actually released Meet the Beatles, second album, Something New, A Hard Day's Night, and Beatles 65 at the very end of the year. And that was a tremendous challenge on George Martin their producer, to keep, you know, recording this stuff and putting it out. Because, I mean, you have to arrange this stuff. You have to produce it. You have to make it recordable. And that's a challenge. I think George Martin, to me, was a genius in how he worked with the Beatles, Bruce.
Yeah, he did that with the four-track. And then by the time the White Album came across, I think they had the eight-track. I don't think they had it for Sgt. Pepper's. And they had to layer that, but they would sit and George Martin would tell them how he thought that this should go as far as a song. Like I was thinking, you know, I'm Looking Through You, songs like that.
Yes, great song.
And they went with George Martin, you know. They very seldom contested what he said.
Well, George Martin, obviously, in many ways, was really the genius behind the group. I've read that they would show up in the studio with a melody and lyrics, and they would literally just sit there and strum the song, you know, the guitar, and just kind of strum the, you know, just kind of sing it to George Martin, who would then kind of take it from there and turn it into the song that we heard. I don't know if it was that way all the time, but you cannot think of the Beatles without George Martin. I mean, I think they're inseparable, perfect match. Everything was like just perfect match. Great producer, great songwriters, and the ability to continue to write songs. I mean, it's a tremendous, it's a perfect match, Bruce. I don't know how else to say it, Bruce.
Leonard Bernstein said, and this was after Revolver came out, that Good Day Sunshine was a song written by a genius. You know, it was his favorite song off that album, his favorite Beatles song. And there's a piano part on there that's overdubbed, the vocals and guitars, and that's George Martin.
Yes.
Piano solo on the track.
That's right. And he did, if I remember, on Rubber Soul, he also played the organ or the piano on a couple of songs. Well, let's talk about our favorite albums. In my case, I've got three, but let's go with you first. What are your three favorite Beatle albums, and tell me why? By the way, that's the name of a song by the Beatles, Tell Me Why, from Hard Day's Night. So tell me what your three favorite albums are, and then I'll tell you mine.
Sgt. Pepper, Revolver, and Rubber Soul.
Okay.
Sgt. Pepper.
Yeah, tell me why Sgt. Pepper's, is it number one or is it just out of the three? Are they
number one because of the depth. It's a beautiful tapestry of creation. I mean,
yes.
I don't know how anything's been done since. I mean, people say Pet Sounds, or the Who's Quadrophenia, or Tommy, but no. Sgt. Pepper just had so many great moments in it, from the starting out to the end with the Day in a Life.
Yeah,
Taxman started out, Revolver, and it's just. That album changed everything as far as people looked at the Beatles. Rubber Soul was a very sophisticated album, and people said, well, they're trying to be kind of folky, and I think they missed the point of that. They could do that if they wanted to. Rubber Soul was very serious business, and
mm-hmm.
The first two songs on that album are Taxman and Eleanor Rigby, very serious songs, and it wasn't cute. The Beatles weren't cute anymore. They actually
right.
lost the moniker of cute, you know, pop band with Rubber Soul.
Because mm-hmm.
Rubber Soul came out. And they could
now,
do a number of things.
Absolutely. No, Rubber Soul is amazing. I mean, to me, that's an amazing album. Now, Sgt. Pepper's, I remember when that came out, and not a single, and it was very weird, because they did not release any singles out of Sgt. Pepper's, which was very unusual because bands would always release a single or two out of an album. But I thought Sgt. Pepper's, some of the, like one of the best songs in Sgt. Pepper's for me personally was Lovely Rita. I thought that was a fantastic song. Lovely Rita, Meter Maid. I thought that was a absolutely great song. And I never got into She's Leaving Home. A lot of people thought that was a great song. I never got into that song. But I thought Getting Better All the Time was absolutely fantastic. And Fixing a Hole, I thought that was fantastic too. So those were songs that maybe didn't get a lot of airplay, but I thought they were great. When I'm 64 is a great song, because I remember hearing that song and saying to myself, well, someday I'll sing that song. Well, someday is here.
Yeah, I remember when I was 64.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I remember hearing that song and saying, gee, someday it'll be funny to play that for me. And, of course, that happened. So that was a cute song. I have to confess that I don't like the George Harrison Within You, Without You, that 5-minute, you know, sitar. I really didn't like that. But everything else in the album, A Day in the Life, I agree with you. I think the arrangement, that piano at the end, I mean, that really, you know, that really did it too. So I agree. Sgt. Pepper's was a great album. So the other two it's Rubber Soul and Revolver and Sgt. Pepper's. Those are the three for you, right?
Yeah, those three albums, the Beatles redefined folk culture. They took it from popular music to art, to a higher art form,
right?
In the studio with their music. And the reason they didn't take Sgt. Pepper's up into singles was they wanted the album listened to and perceived as an album.
Right.
You know, you have
I think
to do
they
the
used
whole
to call
thing.
It
yeah,
a concept album, I think they called it, right?
Yeah, and that was the only one they did that with, because following, the White Album, I don't think there were any singles off that. Everyone said, well, back in the USSR, and While My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Yeah. Obladi Oblada, too. That would have been a big seller, too, you know. Had it been released as a single.
That album carried its own weight, sold as it was. It wasn't until they got to Magical Mystery Tour that they released Strawberry Fields Forever and Penny Lane, which originally were recorded, and they had intended them to be on Sgt. Pepper's, but the Beatles felt they didn't fit, so they set them aside, and they were released as singles, then followed by Magical Mystery Tour.
That's right. Yeah, Magical Mystery Tour. Talking about my British friend, we had a kid from Britain who came to our school for a year as exchange student, and that's how I learned that the Beatles had different albums in the UK. And he brought with him a copy of Magical Mystery Tour, and Magical Mystery Tour in England was released as a double 45, meaning, you know, you had two 45s. And they had like five or six songs in the 245s. It was like really an interesting concept. It was the same album cover that we had here with all of the interior, you know, pages that we had here. The only difference was that in England they released it as a double 45, meaning two 245s and the songs on them, and which was completely different. Well, let me go to my three. Because for me, the most interesting period of the Beatles. I love Sgt. Pepper's too. I love the White Album. But my three favorite ones, or my favorite period, is from Rubber Soul to Revolver. And in the United States, there was another album released called Yesterday and Today. And these three albums together had all of the Revolver and Rubber Soul albums. Songs that were in the UK versions. And to me, Rubber Soul is, if I have to pick one, that is my favorite, because it's very melodic, and I tend to like those kinds of songs, like I'm Looking Through You, Girl, Norwegian Wood. I really like those songs. Michelle was also on that album. I'm Looking Through You, it's just a great song. Norwegian Wood is a great song. So I love it because it's very melodic. It was very nice to listen to. It was probably the Beatles. To me, it was their best songwriting in an album, that one. Revolver, like you were saying, kind of set just like it just shook up everything. Because you had songs on Revolver like Eleanor Rigby, even Yellow Submarine, which is kind of a fun song. You've got a lot of soundtrack in, I mean, a lot of sound effects. And there's a song in Revolver that I absolutely love. It's called For No One. And I think that's one of the greatest songs that Paul McCartney ever wrote. Just a beautiful ballad and just absolutely great. Good Day Sunshine is a great song, too. Here, There, and Everywhere. I mean, that's one of Paul McCartney's greatest songs. So, yes, Revolver and Rubber Soul for me, that's the period that if I had to take one period of their career and say, okay, this is what I'm going to listen to and only listen to, that's what I would choose, that particular period, because Rubber Soul was so melodic, and Revolver, like you said a minute ago, Bruce, that just changed everything. I mean, any rock band after Revolver had to know that there's a different ball game that the Beatles were, a different league, if you will, that the Beatles were in, Bruce.
In the summer of 71, I was a roadie, not a musician, but a roadie. I traveled with a band called the Jeff Scott Rhythm Band, and they did, they were a rhythm blues funk band, brass section, Black League singer, I think his name was Dave King, the kid could sing, and they just delved into music and dissected it and put it out live around the Midwest, universities and, you know, things like that we went to. They did a cover of Got to Get You Into My Life, and it was like nothing I've ever heard, and they were all amazed at how the song was written by two mm-hmm. guys that played guitars. And these kids that were in the band were, they majored in music at the University of Nebraska and other places. And the fact that that song could span that, you see what I'm saying? That it picked up the ear of those musicians, rhythm blues and a funk band, and they did a cover of Got to Get You Into My Life. You know, it's kind of like Rubber Soul tugs at your heartstring. Because it's a very, I don't know what the word I want.
Well, it's very romantic. I mean, if you think the songs are very romantic, if you want to look at it that way. I mean, some of the songs are very romantic on that album, you know. So I don't know. I think romantic or soft would be the word for soft rock, you know. That's what I would describe. I mean, there wasn't anything really hard in Rubber Soul that I can remember. Everything was pretty easy.
Very melodic, easy to listen to, and the lyrics tug at your heart.
Yes.
You get to Revolver, and all of a sudden the Beatles are no longer cute. They're not part of the pop scene. This is a group to be reckoned with. And these are just young guys, what, 3 years from when they released Meet the Beatles?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the fact is that John was born in 1940, so he was 27, not even 26, he was 26 on his way to 27 when they released Sgt. Pepper's. Paul was born in 42, so he was 25 when Sgt. Pepper's came out. George was born in 43, so he was the youngest one. And, of course, Ringo, who joined the band later, was also 1940. So you're right. These are guys in their late 20s who were writing and recording some unbelievable stuff that, frankly, I don't think we appreciated as much then as we do now, Bruce.
They had decided to quit touring. I think their last concert was at Candlestick Stadium in San Francisco.
That's right. That's correct,
And they went to the studio, and Revolver, up to that date, was the most technical recorded album of the time. Using what was available to them, studio technology, thanks to George Martin.
Yes, yes. And Martin was a genius. I really believe that. And that's what I said before. This was a perfect match between the genius and the geniuses. Martin just knew how to put it all together. And as I understand from reading about Martin and the Beatles, that Martin was very demanding. He was older than they were, maybe 20 years older than the Beatles. And he was very demanding in the studio. And that probably worked to the Beatles' advantage. You know, one more thing I wanted to say before we go, well, a couple of things. George Martin later produced America, that trio of great sound, that trio called America. And they had some great songs that he produced for them, right? I remember that. And
Martin was very, he wanted their harmonies as tight as they could be because they were competing with the Beatles, Crosby, Stills, Nash. America has wonderful harmonies on there.
Yeah, America is one of my favorite groups for that reason, for their harmonies, absolutely amazing, amazing sound. Well, let me ask you one last question. Take yourself back to 1970, just for a second, 1970, 1971. The Beatles are breaking up. People were thinking about the Beatles getting back together. Obviously, that never happened. Did you believe in 1970 or 1971 that people would be talking about them 50 years later to the extent that they do? Their sales are incredible. Did you think that 50 years from now, they're going to be talking about the Beatles? Did you think that?
No, I did not. I was not. I compared the Beatles music to a music theory class, like where we studied Beethoven's, the Ninth Symphony? The one where the symphony tells a story of a storm that comes to a small village and the ravage of the storm, and then the village comes back to life. And, I looked at the Beatles like that. And 50 years later, people are still talking about there's still airplay on good FM stations, and the albums are still selling.
Oh, they're selling. I mean, they don't have any trouble selling albums. I mean, their children, their offspring are going to be safe for generations because they're selling. I didn't think, honestly, that people would be listening to him 50 years later back then. What I thought would happen to the Beatles is the same thing that I saw happen with some of the singers and artists that my parents used to listen to. I thought, well, a certain generation, like you and I, would listen to them, but I didn't think the new generation would follow the Beatles. But what I have seen is that if you go to YouTube, there's all kinds of young bands who are not even born in 1970, in some cases 20-something, 30-something guys who were not even born when the Beatles were around, who have picked up their music in all kinds of different ways. So they've had a tremendous influence on music. And I think for my money, you know, there's nothing that's been recorded in the last 15 or 20 years that even matches the Beatles, which is another reason I think why I enjoy them, because their music is better than anything I've heard in a long time, Bruce.
You know, when Deja Vu by Crosby, Stills, and Nash came out, one of the things, I can't remember where I read this, Rolling Stone was often just wrong on their reviews of new releases. And somebody said Crosby, Stills, and Nash, you know, Deja Vu could match any Beatles album. And I don't to compare groups up to one another, but it was a good album. And Stephen Stills had some great classics on there. The Young contributions on it, Neil Young, I don't know, you know, you can take that where you want. But it's nowhere near the album Sgt. Pepper's was, or even Abbey Road, you know.
Right.
I mean, Abbey Road was just something else. You know, and I was thinking on listening to Abbey Road that, you know, the rumors were that they're going away because the Long and Winding Road was already in the can by the time Abbey Road came out. It just hadn't been released.
And The Long and Winding Road, of course, was a cause of some controversy when it was released, because the release, the song that was eventually released as the 45, was arranged by Phil Spector. And as I understand, Paul McCartney never liked that arrangement. And eventually, what they call a naked version of Long and Winding Road came out. That I've heard that, and that's a much better, I think, a much better song. Well, Bruce, my goodness, we're out of time, but I do want to thank you so much for going back with me a little bit and remembering a bit of our past. I don't know, it's hard to explain what we listened to and what we went through growing up. I don't know if the new kids can understand it, but it just seemed like when we were growing up, we were always looking forward to their new album or new song. I don't know if the kids today do that, but I can remember, you know, listening to the radio and they would say, oh, the Beatles have a new album coming out. And we would actually anticipate the release and check at the record store and see when it would be available. I remember doing that. I don't know if the kids today do that because they don't really listen to music the same way we did. I mean, they download everything now. Everything is on their iPhone, so it's a totally different business as well, Bruce.
And I don't think the craft of making music is put into it with the big artists they have as much as it was with the artists of the 60s and 70s.
Yeah. I think the quality of the songs is where I draw the line. I can't, you know, I remember just one quick story. When our first son was born, May of 1987, there was a band that was like supposed to be the best band in the world. I think it was called U2 or something. They had an album that was the number one album in the country at the time, and
Joshua
everything
Tree.
Was... Which one?
Joshua Tree by U2.
There you go. It was like the number one album, and everybody was talking about it. Everybody had it. So I finally said, well, I'm going to get a copy of this and listen to it. And I did. I bought a copy of it. And, yeah, a couple of good songs in it. But, I mean, you know, nothing that I would remember now. So it's totally different than the Beatles, to say the least. And then, of course, in the 90s, you had all that other stuff that came out. Again, nothing did for me what the Beatles did back then. Bruce, thank you for your time. And we'll do it again. We'll pick another topic. We're going to do shows with Bruce from time to time. And we'll pick another topic the next time, maybe something from On This Day in History or On This Week in History. But I'll close with one on this day in history. The Beatles' Long and Winding Road was the number one song this week in 1970. So that turned out to be their last real number one. There were a couple of other re-releases, like Got to Get You Into My Life was released or re-released later in the 70s. But The Long and Winding Road, number one this week in 1970, that was literally the end of the Beatles, Bruce.
I remember. I was heartbroken.
That's right. Well, thank you for your time. I'm sorry we had some technical problems, but I think we got the show in. I think you would agree with me that we got it in.
All right, Sylvia. As always, it's a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Our good friend Bruce, and we've become great friends. You know, it's one of the good things about social media, that you make friends that maybe you wouldn't have made before because of distances and locations. But because of social media, you can make some good friends and get to know people well. That's, you know, one of the good things, I guess, about social media. Thank you for listening as we did a little look back at the Beatles. Just an absolutely amazing group. What else can you say about them? I think they were at the right time, at the right place. It was the perfect match between George Martin and the Beatles, and everything turned out well for the band. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.